good.
Go ahead.
Hang on a sec. Hey, Tori.
Okay, so welcome to the November 9th, 2021 special meeting of the Port of Kingston.
Oh, she's on mute. Laura, you're on mute.
Why does it keep muting? Okay, Tara, are you recording?
Yep. Yes.
Okay, I'll start it. Welcome to the November 9th, 2021 special meeting of the Port of Kingston Commission. Comments from those in attendance will be allowed upon recognition of the chair. Please identify yourself by stating your name. If you would like to be added to the agenda for a future meeting, please contact the port office at least 1 week prior to the regularly scheduled meeting. Please submit your documents and or presentations at the time of the request. So I'm going to call this meeting to order at 6:32, and could we all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? I believe it's over towards the entrance to the Village Green. I pledge
allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So has the commission had a chance to look over the agenda?
Yes.
Could I have a motion to approve the agenda?
I so move.
And I'll second that.
Any further discussion?
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Agenda approved. We're going to move on to the public comment period. Citizens may address the commission regarding any item related to port business, including items on the agenda. Is there any public? I can't see. So, Greg, I would appreciate it if you or Mary would acknowledge if someone's trying to speak.
Yeah, maybe we'll start with the people in the room and then we can move to Zoom from there, if that works.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to raise your hand if you'd like to speak?
Whatever you want to do, that should pick up your voice. But mask on, mask off, speaking. Your preference. Yeah. <laughs> Anyone object if I take this off? No objection. Okay, here I can't hear. Just one, taking it off, come a little. Yeah, come as close as you can. Thank you. Okay, sorry about that. I'm here. That's the speaker, so microphone. Yeah, if you stand near where Tara's standing, because we can hear her, no problem.
Here?
Yeah.
Okay. How's this?
That's great.
Okay, Jack Bryce. I have a boat at C-49 and we live up in Hansville. So, first question I guess I have is, what's the purpose of the port? In the commissioner's words.
The purpose of the port is to promote economic development in Kingston and the Port District.
Oh, it's not for the well-being of the residents of the area?
I was just going to say. the purpose of that is the well-being of the citizens in the district.
I see.
Given that the Port District is the most comprehensive government agency dealing with Kingston, we have acknowledged over time the importance of our looking broadly at the whole community.
Great, wonderful. So would you say that that's North Kitsap or just Kingston? Or?
Well, technically the Port District, which is larger than Kingston, but there's other port districts, and I think that we belong to the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council, which includes the county and the four cities and the two tribes and the Port of Bremerton and the Port of Kingston. And so we're very aware that what we do has an impact throughout the whole county, and what the county and all the other jurisdictions do has an impact on us.
Got it. Okay. Thank you for that explanation. Before, I forgot to ask, do any of the commissioners have boats in the marina?
No.
No.
Mary. Mary.
Sort of. I have had, my husband and I had a boat in the marina for 32 years.
But not currently.
Not very long. And we, several years ago, passed it on to our son.
Great. Very nice.
So I still feel like I'm Rachel.
Okay. So I would say in the last 3 to 4 years, there have been rate increases, sizable rate increases, and I'm wondering what prompted that.
We can let Greg address that.
So when we looked at, basically looked at the financials for the port, and we looked at the projection down the road of when the marina is going to have to get replaced, the estimated cost for the replacement of the marina is about $12 to $15 million. Looked at the reserves, what we have saved, which is it's about $2.18 million currently. Looked at what revenue we have coming in, and then we did a projection on, you know, how are we going to be sitting. We also did, you know, we involved some grants. We looked at any possibilities for other funding sources, which we are pursuing. But there's going to be a significant shortfall for even replacing the marina itself, though it could be we're closing that gap in effect through rate increases, and that money just gets gets reinvested. Because we also have the seawall,
yes.
We also have the breakwater, and then we have utilities, we have dredge expectations, and maintaining all the other infrastructure. So we have about $30 million in assets that we're going to have to look at replacing somewhere down the road. And we're already, almost all the assets already, at least anywhere, like the bathrooms are 53 years old. So some of this infrastructure was built in 1967 when the marina was built. So that's kind of what we're up against, is also what's the life cycle of each and every asset.
And so what's the reserve?
The reserve is about 2.18 right now. Yep.
And how much do you
And it was about 831,000.
And what do you accrue on an annual basis, or what?
That varies, but we're trying to, you know, we're trying to actually ultimately hit, you know, 700,000 plus, maybe $1 million.
Annually.
Annually.
Okay. Yep. So I assume you're aware what these rate increases have been. If this 22 rate increase goes in, it's in excess of 70% increase. Are all the commissioners aware of that, that it's that big a jump?
From the original?
From
previous, yeah.
Yeah, from 2018.
2018 is when we have corrections, yes.
And so 70-some percent, there's about at 73 or 75.
Yes.
Pretty good increase. I assume that everyone would be concerned if your property taxes went up at that rate for your homes. Is that right? Or would people accept that?
Certainly be concerned, yeah.
You don't, you wouldn't,
fact,
you wouldn't bother.
My property taxes have gone up an average of 10% a year over the last 5 years.
Okay, well, then you can do this is more.
So one of the things we did do a survey of 60 marinas. So we were at the very bottom five in terms of all rates across 60 marinas. That included private and public. And so when you look at percentage increase, if you're at the very bottom, and there's a differentiation of probably the top is three times the cost of the bottom rate. So there's a huge range. So if you're at the bottom and you're looking at what revenue you actually are producing in order to be able to sustain that asset, so when you look at percentage increases, it does look significantly higher. But if you go, no, truly, I mean, I understand what you're saying. But
yes.
So what the goal was, we said, hey, look at the level of service that's being provided, and also look at trying to close that gap to pay for the capital, the repair and replacement of the asset. And so how do we close that gap? So this is the third in a cycle that they started like almost 3 years ago, right? So they said, okay, let's try to get to the average rate, see what happens with the cash flow, and see also what happens because we depend on parking and other revenue streams too.
Of course.
So that's where we ended up at. We're going, okay, let's just try to get to the average, see where that sets us at. Also look at wait lists and other considerations to determine whether we're charging fair market value, quote unquote, or and also are we moving towards being able to be a financially sustainable port.
Right. Is there a concern that the area residents will fritter away and they'll be filled with people outside of the area? I mean, you're going to press people out.
There is a significant waiting list as well in every category of slip available at the port as well. So, but the waiting list also has a say in the market as well. Greg can probably get into that in a little bit more detail as well. But that's also a factor.
To answer your question, yes. So I think you have to look at, there's different arguments. So people will say, hey, listen, I'm also paying property tax if I live within the port district, right? So they'll say, hey, why am I subsidizing people from outside the port district, on the rates? So there's a lot of, there's all sorts of different arguments, okay, that people put forward. Right now, I think out of 262 perm slips, there's 116 that are port district residents, it's 44%.
I guess I'm surprised it's that low. Maybe that's an indication. Do you think there are ports that don't have waiting lists?
Are there other ports that don't have waiting lists?
Are there ports that do not have waiting lists?
Yes.
Is that right? I guess that surprises me also. Yeah. Do you know who they are?
I know Port of Evans does not have a waiting list, and they actually intentionally do not have a waiting list.
Oh.
That's how they determine that they're charging fair market value.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, to go on with this, CPI, the last 3 years, under 2%. The Fed works to keep inflation under 2% per year. And we're up 70%. Versus six. So I think it's a huge jump, has been a huge jump, and I would just ask the commissioners to look at it again and think about that. And if it was coming out of their pocket, how would they feel? Even if you backed off this current increase, you're still up well over 50% from where you started in 18. So, and it, of course, it compounds. Thank you very kindly. I appreciate your time.
Yeah.
Questions? No? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So was there anyone else lined up for public comment?
Yeah. I did.
Do you mind coming over by the
yes.
microphone?
Yes, not a problem.
And introducing yourself.
I'm going to take my mask off as well.
Got it.
Jerry Kirshner. I am here talking as a marina tenant only. I'm pretty pessimistic in terms of saying anything tonight that's going to change the marina fees for this coming year, so I'm not even going to try to convince you of that. I want to talk about outcomes, perceived outcomes, and where we're going as a community. To me, I had 2 points to talk about, but now there's a third one I would like to talk about tonight. First of all, the concept of raising our rates to get to par with other marinas around the area, understand where we've come from. Our rate has gone up 75%. Part of that is catch-up, understand that. But you get to a point where you say, where does catch-up finish, and where is it the opportunity for the port to just keep getting more and more revenue without giving more and more services. To me, as we get closer and closer to fair market, the expectation as a customer is that there should be services that coincide with rate increases. Some of those services, you look around other marinas, they're there. To me, the biggest problem that the port has right now, sanitary conditions from the birds on top of the covered moorage. We have a covered moorage, but right now, temporarily, we're outside of that. And when those birds take off, you have to duck. It's a strafing run. It's absolutely terrible in terms of the bird dropping, not just getting hitting people, but leaving it on the walkways and on the boats. And other marinas have spent the money. That's what we need to do, is spend the money. You're getting the money, you gotta spend it. You gotta take care of that bird problem. It's unsanitary. The second thing that I look around other marinas, what other marinas provide services on par with those income, those revenues? Certainly, the whole opportunity for having portable pump outs on the permanent docks, so we don't have to take our boats out, get them over to the fuel dock, pump them out, and then bring them back. Another thing, simply the need for recycled oil, used oil, used antifreeze. Otherwise, when we change our oils, we have to pack that up and take it up to Hansville. Add a burden on us, even though we're paying for comparable services. The one that's most fundamental that almost all marinas have is recycled material. When we're on our boats, those of us that pay attention to recycling, we have to pack it up, take it home, and put it in our own trash. The port should have that. That's a standard. So if you're going to charge us, you need to put the services out there. The other thing, as I looked at what could be the intended strategic outcome of these rate increases. And Greg, you hit it in terms of some marinas keep raising the rates until there's no waiting list. The problem with that is that it really segregates people in the marina to those that can't afford it. You know, Nancy and I have, as you know, lived on our sailboat around the world. I should be slowing down here a moment. And we've come across all the way from the mega yacht people on the one end to the guy that worked as a mechanic in a Honda dealership. High end, low end. But they all added something to the boating experience. And if you keep pushing higher and higher, you're taking that away. So you need to think about where this is going to go. The other thing that I wanted to bring up tonight, based upon what you said, Greg, is that you talked about the need for amassing funds to take care of the marina. That marina is not just for those of us that are in the marina. That's a community asset. Why is it that the marina folks are the ones that are bearing the burden of this financial aspect? Why isn't the entire district? No one's talking about raising the taxes on the entire district. When we went through the need for increasing our insurance so we could minimize the risk to the port, we did that. We absorbed those costs. But there was no discussion about, okay, we're helping the port cover their insurance risk. How come the entire district isn't doing that? So, I'm getting kind of emotional here from the standpoint that I think you're on the wrong track. You really need to back up and think about what you're doing to the people in the marina as well as to the community. I know this rate's going to go through, but think about what you're going to do next. Don't keep pushing. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
Yeah, appreciate that, Jerry. As a quick response back to one of your items, Jerry, the idea of the bird the bird problem is that is in the budget for this next year, that we're talking about bird deterrence. So we're actually looking to do it now.
Nancy Langwood, I'm a resident of Kingston, and I'm going to wear three hats tonight. Yes, we're all coming in threes here. The first hat is as a boat owner in the marina, and I would just echo Jerry's comments rather than go back through all that. So I could just put a ditto beside that. The second one is I have a letter from Jack Lott, who is also a marina resident. He has cattywampus, and he's on slip E27. And he asked me to read his letter to you. So this is not me speaking. This is Jack Lott. The letter is addressed to the commissioners. And RE, the proposed rate increase. And he says, "Commissioners, as the front door to the Kingston community, the port is a vital part of our collective identity. The challenges that face port facilities in complying with all regulatory requirements is complicated, to say the least. Meeting the needs of your tenants as well as the general public in fulfilling the central role the port has in community access to water-based recreation adds to that complication and is a significant mission as well. We all understand these facts. I have made the statement above in support of the purpose of this letter, which is to help you understand some of these issues your tenants have that directly reflect on the image of the port portrays to the community at large, whether that be visitors or residents. As a tenant in the marina for just over a year now, I've experienced critical issues that I want the port to feel obligated to address, as specifically called out in the Clean Marina programs enacted in 2005. This program provides clear guidelines marinas can follow to earn and maintain certification as a clean marina under the Washington State laws, regulations, and best practices. Over the past years, other tenants have told me that there has been a continuing increase in the buildup of organic growth and animal waste from birds and other sea life on the dock structures. My personal experience this past year has been to have the overpowering stench of bird droppings fill the air and frequently to be bombarded by large amounts of bird droppings on my boat where I'm moored. This organic matter provides a perfect environment for moss and mold to grow, making it not only an eyesore, but a health issue that must be addressed. On page 21 of the Clean Marinas Handbook under Best Practices, I quote, "The port should," this is in quotes, "keep the dock and supporting structures clear of organic growth like moss and mold and animal waste from birds and sea life to protect against health-related issues that may harm humans," unquote. Inviting guests to our slip almost always is preceded by an apology for the smell and the mess to be found. To avoid embarrassment, I often spend hours washing my boat prior to guests arriving so that they're not repulsed by what they may see. This isn't the way the front door of our community should be maintained. I've provided photos I've taken this past year to show you what we're dealing with. There are other issues, such as derelict boats, dock boxes overfull, bursting of trash and debris, sightings of rats on the docks, and the everyday experience of navigating around large pools of heron droppings all along the dock. I believe all of these issues are related one way or another. Rather than argue that the port has continued to increase moorage rates at a much higher rate than general inflation, this year's increase, 8.8%, I would like the port to use a portion of the increased rate revenues to mitigate these issues. And he sent with me some pictures. How do I do that so they see it?
I can submit it to them by email if you don't mind leaving it with me.
Okay, so I'll leave these with you guys. There's one of the, that's the side of his boat. This is the coach roof of his boat.
Yeah.
And that's the dock right beside his boat. So I make no comment on that. I just submit it to you. Hat number three, on a lighter note, this is a Kingston Cove Christmas. I want to thank the board publicly for getting lights together, and we know that it's hard work. The community knows it's hard work. So we're thankful that you're doing it. And we the Yacht Club, would also like to publicly say that we are happy to put small work groups together. Ray, at your bequest, tell me how many you want, what time you want them, and how many hours you need them. And I will see that we get some folks down there to help with getting them out, testing the lights, etc. I did send that in emails to both Greg and Ray, but I wanted to emphasize that publicly, that we're willing to help get the job done, and we'll help take them down as well, whatever you need. I also wanted to say, I put the first post out on Facebook on Sunday, and before I left, we've already reached 7,500 people. This is one post, and it was shared 85 times. So, you know, what this says is the community is excited, they're engaged, and they can't wait to come. So although, you know, the Yacht Club is happy to sponsor it this year, we couldn't do it without the lights. So they're an integral part of this, and we say thank you, and hopefully, you know, as the chamber gets stronger, that they'll be able to pick it up and take over next year, and the Yacht Club will partner with them to make that happen. We currently have the administrator, I guess, of the chamber is on the committee, so she's learning all that happens, and I plan on leaving a detailed plan of what you need to do in order to put the entire event on. I've also included in the all the publicity, so there's actual events at the port. Then at the bottom, there's all the other events in the community. So the Festival of Trees here, there's a craft and book sale at the Village Green. The Youth Sports Association is having a cookie crawl. We've never had that in Kingston, so you know that's a totally new thing. So all of these, and the Kiwanis Workshop that is held at the Yacht Club. So we're trying to be all-inclusive and be good partners with everybody in the community and be sure that everybody gets some attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy.
Ray's got a comment.
Ray's got his hand up.
Go ahead, Ray.
I actually do, really. I can't even figure out how they have these pictures on the phone right now, to be honest with you. I don't know what happened here, but Nancy, I'm so happy for the community and stuff like that, and you know, with Grace Dice and stuff like that. Yeah, we're trying to move forward with the as far as the Christmas show goes and stuff like that. As far as the roof goes, you know, it is something that's very much on our radar, and we have that for the future. And I want Jerry to know that too. Is that, you know, Greg and I have been talking about this for a long time, as far as taking care of this problem, as far as the roof goes, and we're going to address that as far as the the following, you know, the capital budget that we have coming up here. So that's a big deal. As far as the Christmas goes, I have to tell you, Nancy, man, it's a big deal for the commissioners and all of us for you to know. And please pass it on to everybody that we're going to do our best here to make sure that everything is going to be a great year for this year, because we need this. We actually need this for the community. And Greg and I have been talking about it for a long time, you know, for actually the last 3 months, that we need to make sure that everybody knows that we're going to provide a really nice time for everybody. And we'll do what we can to make sure the lights are as well as we can possibly do. So, but honest to God, we, you know, I have to tell you guys, man, I get the best commission in the whole world, and they all know that we need to do what's good for the public and in our community. So, and with Grace guidance, man, we're going to make this happen. So thank you, Nancy.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Nancy.
Thanks,
I know
Greg.
You guys do a lot of work year over year, all of you guys at the Yacht Club, and, you know, everybody makes it happen, but... I think it's going to be pretty successful this year. It's going to be a big turnout. It's going to be intense, but that's good.
And we're only marketing to Kitsap County. So those 7,500 people, you know, came from, they're here. I didn't market to I-5, you know, so that we didn't get the 4,000 or 5,000 people that we've had in the past.
Yeah.
And I want to say that I have probably about, I don't know, coming down from Bellingham, every year since the first day we've done this, you know, 35 to maybe 40 voters that want to come down here for the same situation. So, we're going to have a good year this year. I promise. I promise that. So, commissioners on board with that. And they're amazing. So, thank you.
Okay, we got one more in-person speaker, and then we'll move to Zoom.
Hi, my name is Steve Young. I'm a tenant, and I live in the port, and I have a few comments for the board. I'd really like to kind of put a little practical perspective on the things that we've talked about tonight. And so you know, we don't have a $250,000 boat. Our boat is a 32 Bayliner, and it's probably worth, at the most, $50,000. My wife and I are on a fixed income. I look back when we first got mortgage with the port, and it was September of 05. Our mortgage was $210. Since then, it's almost tripled. It seems like every year, our rates get increased by about $50 a month. And this year, it's just almost $600 a year that we will be paying more this year than we paid last year. So we talked a little bit about a double dip, about the fact that we pay taxes and that we're tenants and we pay for our mortgage. And it is a little discouraging that the port never looks to the people here in the community for additional money. The fact is that everybody in the community has the opportunity to come down and use the port facilities as a park. And it's the only really nice park that we have in the whole area. And so those folks get this, you know, all of them get the same enjoyment that we get, and yet their rates never go up. We pay about $7,000 a year for our mortgage, which is a lot of money. You have to stop and think, do you have an extra $7,000? And really what it's doing to a lot of people, and my wife and I just said when we realized how much the rates were going up this year, you know, it's getting awfully expensive to own a boat. And the insurance isn't going up, the amount of fuel that we use isn't going up, hopefully our maintenance isn't going up, but the thing that continues to go up is the rates that we charge our tenants. And something that I guess is caught in my craw here for the last number of years is that the port lost a very significant lawsuit a few years back. The tenants didn't have anything to do with that. Zero. And yet, in order to make up the money and the increased rates, the insurance rates and whatnot that the port has experienced, the port is looking at the tenants to make back some of that money that was lost. And it's always been really disappointing to me because there were a lot of mistakes made, but the tenants made none. I do want to say that we appreciate the port. We appreciate the commissioners. We're proud of the park. We're proud of the way that port looks. We're proud of our employees. And it isn't as if we aren't proud of the Port of Kingston. It's just that we feel like, we being the tenants, feel like we're bearing the brunt of expenses that the port sees in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Steve.
Did you have a comment, Ray?
No, I just said thanks, Steve.
Oh, sorry.
Thanks, Ray.
Your hand's still up, so I wasn't sure.
Oh, I need that. As I try to figure out how to get this thing out of my phone. I'm
I got
sorry.
It.
There
I got
you
it.
Go.
I took care of it. Okay, so we're gonna move to the Zoom comments. So I'll just go down the list here. So I've got 801-599. Do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself? Did you want to say anything?
My name is Bill McKee. I'm in C66. I've been a tenant for a number of years, and I really appreciate the special place that Kingston is. But like a lot of other folks, 75%, 80% increase in mortgage is a bit much in a time of turmoil with pandemics and et cetera. And perhaps I can give a little bit of a perspective on mortgage rates with other marinas. I believe it's 42% of the tenants or residents of the natural site of the Sound in Kingston and Kitsap County. But those of us who have another zip code are spending $150 to $200 a month to enjoy the facilities of Kingston with ferry traffic and so forth. So anyway, I appreciate the port, and I understand your challenges, but this is unprecedented, rate increase during these unprecedented times. And that's my sad story.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh. Hey, thanks, Billy.
Mark,
you're welcome.
Mark, did you want to say anything?
Mark Horton.
We'll move on to Rebecca Pirtle. Did you want to say anything tonight? And move on to Tori. Do you have anything? Can you guys hear me okay?
We can.
Okay. Let's see. So, let you move.
So,
on.
I just, Tara?
Yeah.
I just want to clarify something. After listening to everybody, there was just something I wanted to clarify. So, a lot of people were bringing up the term market rate. And in the survey that we did, market rate was way up here. And we were trying to get closer to average market rate, not market rate. So I don't know if people realize that, or but we're still right down here. In fact, we're lower than down here, as you can see. Greg has a really good chart that he put together and has updated every year, and staff has helped him update that in reference to other marinas and things like that. And another thing that wasn't brought up today that I really wanted to bring up and is that another reason, it's one of the many reasons why we started this three-year trying to get close to average market rate, was that years ago, the city of Seattle, the port of Seattle, excuse me, was sued for not trying to charge, for charging below what they should have been charging to their tenants. And the last thing we want to do is get into another lawsuit. And we've had a couple of our local residents who have impressed this upon us that you guys don't want to get into this same position that the Port of Seattle was in. And we were in that position, being number four out of 60, how many marinas, Greg?
About 60.
Out of 60 marinas, we were number four of what we were charging. So it, there's so many factors. I just wanted to kind of add these in here for everyone to just kind of think about. The last thing we want to do is raise rates, but there's just lots of factors involved here. And I just wanted to put those out there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We were fourth from the bottom. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that. So, is there any more public comment during this session?
Well, again, if I may, Bill McKee.
Yes, Bill.
When we talk about market rates and mortgage fees, we're talking about mortgage fees on one side of the Sound and mortgage fees on the other side of the Sound. Well, you have a cost to get from one side to the other. And what I'm saying is the total cost of mooring a boat in Kingston has to include what it might cost on with Washington State ferries to get back and forth. And so there's a reason why you may be down a bit from what they're able to charge in Edmonds or Everett or Seattle. That's my only point.
Oh, yeah, we understand that. We're we totally get that. Thank you, Bill. So we're going to move on to the budget presentation. I believe that's with Greg.
Yep. And I don't know if everybody saw or got a copy of the capital plan. I think that, you know, hopefully some of this starts to address some of the, you know, here's where some of the money is going, certainly. And that is, you know, the marina, it has to be maintained. You do have a level of service, and I'm sensitive to everybody that is a customer in the marina. And actually, we're in agreement that we want to up our game. And you can see on the very first one, I just want to talk about capital projects before I get in the budget, because I just think it is really important. So if we went through these, you can see that an awful lot of this goes towards, you know, like building the bird deterrence. So we were trying to get the bird deterrent actually already done last year, as a matter of fact. We ended up having to go to L&I in order to have them do an inspection and schedule this, which we did, and they came out and said, hey, you guys are doing it right, go ahead, you do have to make these changes, and then you can go up there and go ahead and do your work. So before we could actually install the systems to get rid of it, we had to go through L&I, just so that you know. We did go out and get quotes, and they were so much money that we were like, okay, we got to really take a look at this, re-examine this, if this is the way that we're going to go, or we would have actually had the bird deterrence done last year. And then we ended up, there was a slip and fall on the fast ferry access, and so we put in some non-slip access across the fishing pier, we call it. We got to replace the event tent. The event tent is, you know, as you guys know, that thing is just basically disintegrating, and we fixed it and kept fixing it. We fixed it again this year. And we're just going to throw it away this year. It's just not even, we can't just do any more with it. And I think that Ray and I were talking that the fire department is probably not going to recertify it, even if we wanted to, because there's no more fire retardant on that tent. So we're going to replace the event tent, which goes towards all these incredible events, you know, and helps a lot of these community organizations too. And then we looked at the tent at the office, you know, the restrooms. We were looking at trying to do upgrades to those. And then we're getting into development, which is more economic development, and that's new construction. But then we have the marina Wi-Fi. You know, we've installed it along. What we did was we started with the permanent moorage to install marina Wi-Fi. That's almost completed, and then we're doing the guest dock. And I think that, you know, we talked about it, and we said if we're not going to really have superlative Wi-Fi, don't do it, because it's easy just to where it's so spotty. So it's either all in or not. So that should be a pretty significant improvement. I think people just look at it as a requirement in today's world to have marina Wi-Fi or have Wi-Fi. And we had such a struggle trying to get other people even interested to provide those services. And also, marinas are problematic at best when you can have even a 15-foot tidal variance and all the metal and that kind of thing. The truck was just, we got about $7,000, $8,000 for that truck. It basically is problematic, so we've been looking at whether we're going to replace it, but we want to put that in the budget. So if we decide to go get a truck, that we can do that. You know, we'll buy it and we'll hold it forever and drive it until it drops. The float leveling, you know, we had that big snow event last year, and that was kind of an eye-opener, to say the least. And, you know, I hope we never see a snow quite like that. It was a heck of a bad snow. And so, but we did, you know, that gave us an opportunity, you know, Ray, Tori, and actually even contractors, including Craig, and he came down and looked at it. So that's a pretty significant amount of flotation that we're trying to put in there in order to make sure that we, you know, it can withstand this kind of problems when we're confronted with another snow event like that. Breakwater rock removal. So that old seawall, unfortunately, it's made from basalt as opposed to granite. So way back when, they thought, well, we'll try to shave a little bit of money off, and they went with basalt. Well, basalt breaks down, and the problem is it's rolled down in underneath, and now we've got to try to remove those rocks. It's actually underneath. One of them's, we have a couple. We actually had to, you know, have divers go down and map it all out. So we're hoping that we can get away with, getting those removed so that there's also there's more access for dinghies and that kind of thing. And then we have the middle restroom. So we applied for three different grants. We were successful with two of the grants. And so, you know, that's going to be a, you know, it's really way overdue. It's been amazing, really, what the maintenance staff have done to keep that bathroom going. And it's been redone a number of times. One of the guys, that's, Scott, he's on the boat out here. He remembers as a kid using the showers there with his dad. So he remembers it back like in 67, 68. So that's going to be all replaced. And so we've tried to prioritize those things, which I think really do add value to the experience for everybody. And then we're looking at, you know, some more economic development, a couple items, and then the bulkhead repair. So the bulkhead that we have, it's going to start failing here and there on occasion. That's just the way it is. Very expensive to get it repaired and problematic, but that's actually pretty cheap, I thought, for what we're going to end up doing there over at D-Dock. But and then the piling replacement. So these things are all kind of related sometimes when you look at capital, when you look at your asset base. You just can't segregate these things. It sure would be nice if you could, but we have, you know, we have some issues with some of the pilings, and you know, we've got these wood pilings, and they wear out. Just trying to get permits. Unfortunately, the permit expired, so we have to reapply for the permits to replace these things and do a programmatic, programmatic permit replacement with Army Corps. But these things take a lot of time and effort, and the thing is, when we do the piling replacement, we're trying to get a multiplier effect whenever we spend any money here. So we're also looking at timing through the whole portfolio. So if we rip out those pilings, we want to get environmental mitigation credits. So when they did the marina and we did that big dredge project, we did environmental, we did mitigation. The problem was the mitigation was prescribed to us from the Army Corps and the Department of Ecology and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and it failed. Okay, so we tried to put in eelgrass, and it was even an invasive species of eelgrass, and it couldn't survive. So we end up now, they want us to do, because the agreement that was supposedly signed at the time, or the understanding, was that you mitigate until you've mitigated enough. Well, they want us to spend another $100,000 on mitigation. So these things all come into play when we look at how we're trying to manage the marina and keep it going. And they are pretty, and they can be very tough. The fact that we haven't, they haven't accepted our mitigation, means that when we go in for permits or do anything, they're not going to grant us those permits until we've got a plan for mitigation. And then, of course, the dredge permitting. So the good news was there, great job on the dredge. We had that initial push from the Carpenter Creek that ended up putting sedimentation within the marina. It's not resedimenting. You know, they did about, I'm trying to remember how many yards they took out, or cubic feet, but we have, it's a really a nominal amount of dredging. What we're hoping to do is get a maintenance dredge, and then we can go through and spot dredge through the marina for any, you can see when you're using the boat ramp and different people when you're coming in and out of there, so we can start opening that up a little bit more. So we're trying to roll all these things together in order to make it a better marina and sustain this marina for the long term. And then you can see in the future years. But I think that if you look through here, you'll see that hopefully there's a lot of direct benefit to you guys as customers, because that's what it serves. And I do agree it does serve the community. There's different mindsets about what goes where in terms of when it goes, who should pay, whether it be paid through taxes or what have you. But the reality is that no matter how we cut it, we have $4.2 million available bonding capacity. That's it. You know, if you have a $12 to $15 million lift, you got $2 million in the bank. So if we used every nickel that we make, and you took every nickel of net ordinary income at the end of every year, we're still going to fall short. And then we have to assume that we're going to get all the grants. So what we tried to do was, this was my recommendation to the commission 3 years ago. I said to them, hey, we got to start closing this gap. I don't know how to do it, because we can't, you know, taxing people is also a little bit problematic. We have never taken, so a port is able to do a certain, you know, levy certain taxes. Some you can do without a vote, though everybody is not in favor of doing that a lot of times, because they want people to, okay, if you want to support the port, we'd rather have a voluntary where they go, we do want you to tax us, and goes to a vote potentially. But we haven't exercised that. But even if we do, it's small potatoes. You know, the most I think we can get in tax revenue was around a little over $500,000 to 600,000. We'll see with the new census if we get a little bit more, but there's 5,000 residents in the Port District. And then you get people in the Port District that also have an argument where they, and it's also, you know, holds water a lot of places. They say, well, I don't want to subsidize people from outside of here. So what we did, we increased the parking rates, because that's almost largely, predominantly from people outside the, not completely, but a lot of people outside the Port District. So we did increase the parking revenue with the pandemic. What happened to parking revenue? That collapsed. So that took a hit. So this was just one part of what the plan was in order to be able to rebuild the revenue and the income, and we're going to have to see what happens with parking. But I just thought I'd touch on the capital plan.
Greg, can I ask quickly, how sure. long has it been since the taxes on the how many years?
Well, what happens is, as a result of the IM initiative, you really see property taxes go up 1% a year, and that's it. It's capped. That's all you can do. So it could go before, it could go into a referendum or something like that, or if there was an industrial development district established, and you could go.
I know, but my question is, how long has it been since we've raised the taxes on the people who live in the Port District?
It goes up every year 1%. After the IMA.
1% every year?
Yeah, every year.
So the board has not done more than 1% for, what, 2 decades?
You can't buy, you can't, after the IMA initiative, you can't, you're not allowed to raise it without putting it before a vote.
But I'm still not hearing an answer to my question. How many years has it been since the court has made an effort to raise the taxes beyond the 1%?
I do not know.
Okay.
Not within the last 6 years.
I know it's longer than that.
Yeah, I'm just.
I remember talking.
I would suggest it's been decades.
I would too.
Yeah, decades.
And this is something that we have talked about, and talked about many times. And they've talked about it at WPPA conferences that we've gone to, too, about different ways to do this. And that is something that's on the commission's mind. So rest assured, you talking about it, that's something that we are also talking about.
Good.
Greg, could I ask you to explain or describe what's involved with managing derelict vessels?
Sure. So, you know, so here's the thing. So the port owns 10 acres of uplands, and we have control over 10 acres of submerged lands. It's a very specific delineation on what we have control over, and you can kind of use a GPS and a drone. You can kind of see what we do have. We have a map of it. If any vessel is within our jurisdiction, we then have enforcement capabilities, and we do enforce it. But outside, so if you were to map and you look out here in Apple Tree Cove, there are a few vessels that are anchored out. Those vessels are anchored on state lands, usually. They could be anchored off of, on state, you know, the anchor could be on a state land, but they could swing over into private property. They could lose their
That's
anchorage
right.
and go adrift onto port property. So what we do, we work directly with the U.S. Coast Guard, with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Department of Ecology, and actually the Attorney General's office, as well as Kitsap County Sheriff's office, to enforce, to make sure they're enforcing their own rules, right? Because they put us at risk. So, for example, the tug that's out there has been out there way beyond what it's allowed to, and it swings around, and sometimes it starts losing its anchorage and was heading towards Kitsap Transit fast ferries. And it's been really aggravating, to say the least. And that's a big tug that would be very expensive if it sinks. So we've been working with those guys. And it was actually, I think it was September of 2019, if I remember, Ray. Yeah. And we document the bejesus out of these guys, and we're on them. And they're a nice couple, but they're operating illegally because they're on state property and they're supposed to move every so in every 60 days, I think. That's all they're allowed. So the problem is they've been out there. We contacted the state. The state said, hey, we're going to enforce this. Everything was going forward. Everything was good. And then the pandemic hit, and then they interpreted that as a landlord-tenant relationship so that no eviction could occur.
Yep.
So we disputed that as much as we could, but ultimately that really went all the way up to, I believe, the head of public lands. And then they worked with the attorney general's office we were working with. We had it boarded with a deputy attorney general. So we try to mitigate that risk, because the problem is wherever it lands, that's who gets to own that. And so there was one vessel that Chris Graff out here that basically they were, that's a serial kind of crime that takes place. So Ray and Tori, they're like, this is a problem. We're on it. We're literally calling the Coast Guard, but what happens is they'll say, well, there's all the hazmats off of it, so we're going to just let it, and it sank right in front of us basically the next day. So the problem with the port is that we're not an enforcement agency. If it's on our property, though, we can enforce the law, which we do. And then the other thing we do is if we feel that there's a problem with tenants in the marina, we talk to them and we address it. It's not fair to put other people at risk. Even a purse seiner, for example, can cost you 80 to 100 grand, and it comes right off your bottom line. So we have to hold that money in reserves. So that's is that kind of what you're looking for?
Yeah, well, I think also the cost of dealing with a derelict vessel, because there's an organization called the Kitsap All Ports Group, and all the ports meet every couple of months. And the number one topic every month, every meeting, is derelict vessels, because they are incredibly aggravating on the whole issue of whose land are they on. But if they are on your property, then the cost of dealing with that, you have some sense of the order of magnitude.
It eats up. They have a small fund at the state.
Yeah.
And Tori, you were just at, we just listened to the DOE people do presentations. I can't remember how much they have in the fund. Was it a few million? They're trying to get some more money because one major, how much? Five?
5 million.
Five million.
5 million.
Yeah, so like 5 million, but you get one vessel, like the Olympic or one of these boats, they can be a million. They can just, and then you get lawsuits too. So a lot of times this stuff can come out, just eat you alive. So an ounce of prevention is worth way more than a pound of cure. And actually, we have probably managed derelict vessels. Hands down, when you go to the Kitsap All Ports, we've managed it way out, and that's why they have tons of derelict boats. It's been a real serious issue for a lot of these other ports. So we're super aggressive about it. Some people might think we're almost almost too aggressive. Compared to most anybody else, but we just can't afford to, because that's just money that comes again. It's like you say, well, is that fair that we have to bear that burden? But they're largely not very funded, and then they have another program, which is another risky program, which is underground storage tanks. They have $14 million a year, and so all those little oil tanks, all over the state, and private sector gets access to that money too. So you got to get in line, and that's like a 3 to 4 year, but ours are redone, and so ours are very, we have a minimal risk for a long time. But, that's just one of those things.
I think it's fair to point out that the money for those derelict vessels come from recreational.
And that's
vessels.
Correct.
Exactly.
We're paying again.
You are paying, that's correct.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
And $5 million does not go very far when it's for the whole.
For the state.
Yep.
I can't tell you how extremely proud I am of the job that the staff and Greg, Ray, Tori, all involved that have done in reference to dealing with the Kokura. They have kept this perfect timeline down as to each agency that they have contacted over the last, is it 2 years now?
It's over two, it's coming
and,
over
two. And talked to each of them, and they've kept the commission up to date. And we have a list of every agency they have talked to, when they've talked to them, what the response has been. And it's just this timeline of trying to resolve this, trying to help them to resolve it. But it's just like, I'm hoping now that the moratorium is off, it might make a difference, but I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends on the agencies.
The agencies are trying to pursue that vessel for sure.
Can I add something though to Greg?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So the Kukua was, the moratorium was supposed to be done on September 30th, and then Governor Inslee gave it another month, which is the end of October, as you all know. But what happens with the DNR is that they stamp that boat, and they give them 30 more days. So we'll see what DNR does, because it's in DNR waters, and hopefully, you know, we'll pray, and we can do this, is that boat will get on there. The person on that boat has been coming in Port of Kingston and going out and getting a lot of supplies. Like, he knows his days are numbered, but until it happens, you guys, I can't even tell you that we're not trying, especially with the November winds coming up. His boat is going to be in dire right now, so we have to keep an eye on it. But we're doing our best. I tell you, I have the best staff in the world, and we're out there taking pictures of it, and we're staffed and trying to get DNR, and we talked to the Coast Guard's out there, you know, they're going to get, you know, involved too, so we just have to wait and see, but, you know, hopefully it happens at a timely manner.
Yeah. Thanks, Ray. That's absolutely right.
Thank you, Ray.
Yeah, that it is a, if you looked at these other ports, it's just shocking how many boats they have that are derelict, and it's epidemic, unfortunately. And Port Orchard, they kicked out a whole slug of them, but they just went right in the bay, and they're all just, they're all anchored up out there. But one larger vessel like that is really a risk, a serious risk. Okay, so I'll run through the draft budget. So the draft budget uses 2021 as the baseline for the next year, and various revenues and expense line items have been adjusted to reflect trends that we're experiencing. So we've seen a reduction overall, like in parking revenue this year. So just general comments due to the pandemic. You know, if and when the effects of the pandemic subside, we would expect parking to rebound, and that's what we're counting on. Given the uncertainty, we're not sure that budgeting significant increases is justified, however. And at some point, if we don't see something happen with the parking for rebuilding that revenue, we're going to have to decide what we're going to do with the parking lot area, with that land. It can't sit fallow indefinitely. It's got to be start generating revenue streams. The pandemic has actually strengthened overall, you know, the boating, since people can recreate and socially distance at the same time. And almost all the boating trends that we've seen have an upside currently. And we believe this trend will continue, at least for the next year or two. And so guest and transient moorage have continued to strengthen. So the port, we're projecting operating revenue about $3.34 million. And staff is budgeting operating expenses about $2.7 million. So net ordinary income under this draft version of the budget would be just over $474,000. And then we're out of that, we would be deducting about $192,000 for the capital program. And that dollar amount you can kind of see on your pages at the bottom. You know, you can see we have actually $918,000, but if you subtract out money for the development, it comes out to $192,000. And then we have both an ALEA grant and another RCO grant that will make up the difference for the middle bathroom. And the middle bathroom will also segregate out our power sources. And that power is actually, that power is centralized right there into that bathroom for our whole facility. And so that's a real risk because the water's breaking and then you can't co-locate power and water like that. But that's how it was developed way back in 67. Revenue. So permanent mortgage revenue should increase if the rate increases go forward. We have a wait list that continues to remain strong, even though we've taken customers off of the wait list and they now have mortgage, but they've been backfilled with new demand. And I think that, you know, we also received a lot of criticism because there were years and years and years where nobody gets off a wait list. And so they said, you know, that's not fair. Here I am. I live in the cove and I want to be able to put a boat in the marina and I'm willing to pay for it and I can't even get in. So, because no one's ever going to leave. So we have had turnover though. So that is a good indication that there is some movement within the overall within the demand. A transient mortgage should remain strong, and we've steadily been building seasonal demand from, especially from yacht clubs during some of the peak periods, but even during off-peak periods. I think when we started, I don't know how many yacht clubs we're going to do this year, Ray, but it's just far exceeds what we used to be servicing. And then
should be 40.
What's that? Over 40.
Should be close to 40 this year coming up.
That's what I was thinking. And,
can I take a moment to thank Nancy Langwith for the work that she did developing that whole program and then basically handed it to the port to carry forward?
Yeah. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We've also worked with transient mortgage. Seasonal mortgage. So we break out the guest stock and transient and seasonal. So basically, the guest dock was sitting largely vacant all winter. So what we've done is we changed our business model and our approach. So now we've trying to get it where we increase the occupancy. So it's basically like a floating hotel. And then we hope those folks go uptown and spend money year round for the local businesses in downtown Kingston. And that's been very, very successful. So if you look at this, you'll see the seasonal mortgage, when you go across, then during the peak period, you know, we just turn everything over to transient rates. And then when we get into off-peak season, it converts, some of the capacity converts back over to the seasonal mortgage. We don't know how that's going to continue, but I mean, we're hoping just to keep building on it. I think we really expect it to build for another 2-3 years, and then we think it's probably going to plateau. The utilities, so we've been trying to closely monitor the utilities so we can recover these costs. You know, we haven't had necessarily the best processes in place over the past years, and so we've been really looking closely at that. And I think, you know, when you get into doing some analytics with the data and you have good data, then it becomes pretty obvious what's going on. So we aren't allowed to make money on utilities by law, but we can recover our costs. We haven't been recovering our costs. So we're trying to get that back so that hopefully they're zero sum. Real estate and lease revenue should stay relatively flat, except for CPI adjustments where applicable. You know, most of the leases are pretty long-term leases except for two smaller leases, and we couldn't really do anything until the moratorium was over anyway. So there was not really much to discuss until we saw that the state was going to lift the moratorium on leases. You know, property taxes, again, they just didn't simply increase by 1% every year. And then parking, you know, is really challenging to predict. So, you know, we've lost a lot of revenue from parking, and it's affected commuters. And so we are way down from previous revenue levels. But so we're just going to keep the rates flat for now, and we hope that there's a slight uptick. We started to see, so we have on our monthly parkers, we're up to 68 at one time on monthly parking, and we were down to 25. I think we're up pretty close to 42, 38, somewhere in there, I think, Ray?
40.
Okay, 40.
Yep,
40. No, split the difference. So anyway, we're hoping that we can build more of that monthly parking, and we're interested, even if there ends up being people moving over here and there's some reverse commuters or what have you. Fuel assumption is also a little bit challenging. So the fuel prices were way down. The fuel prices have obviously, they've escalated pretty substantially. And so we're hoping that that doesn't dampen demand too much overall also for boating. But we're just increasing the fuel revenue, but also increasing the fuel cost just to reflect what we see currently in the market. No more, no less, but keeping it pretty much it's flat. So then moving on to expenses. So the sales salary and wages. So the budget reflects a CPI adjustment for across the board. We are looking at adding an FTE for accounting and finance. And I think that what we've seen is that our credit card charges, for example, we came in and we were looking and they seemed to be exorbitant. We were paying probably looking at over $80,000. So we have reduced that down by $30,000, it looks like. We're going to have to renegotiate our credit card charges. But things along that line where we can start controlling expenses, I think it's going to pay out. Same thing happened with excise tax. Excise tax, if you're not used to applying it, it can, you know, it can catch you off guard. So we know that we're going to get another $20,000 back from the Department of Revenue on excise tax that's recoverable, maybe $21,000. And then also on just making sure that our fuel costs, when we purchase fuel, we have a first-in, first-out model for how we price it so that it's kind of static and it moves together versus falling behind where it gets out of alignment with what the costs are. So, and we base our compensation, we're doing benchmarking study, and we have market data, and we look at performance. Employee medical is staying flat. We're not, actually we saw a slight reduction in costs this year, but like 2%. But we're just receiving the actual quote, so it looks like it's just gonna stay flat or just reduced just slightly, but we just received that from the broker. Pension expense actually went down this year. So the state of Washington, they set the requirements for the port on what we have to contribute and pay in. So it was in 7.9% for employees, and it was cut down to 6.36% of their compensation. But they also, the employee contribution went from 12.97% down to 10.25%. Training and education, we're looking at increasing our budget to invest in the staff. I think that we've really settled in with, I think, such a really, really good team of people. And so there are some of these things where there's required training for safety, for example, but there's also some optional training which we believe will actually really strengthen their skill sets and should pay dividends long term. Utilities. So we put a lot of effort in these tracking our utility costs and actually trying to segregate the utility costs. And we believe that we're hoping to recover close to $50,000 in utility costs from one of the customers. But we had to really go through that. And I want to thank Ray and Tori because they went through, segregated out, and tracked through all of the meters throughout the whole port, any and every asset. And now we know we have real hard data that we can go to them and say, this is what your usage is, and document it. So that's the result in savings. And excise taxes, I already touched on that. So we should be recovering about $20,000 from Department of Revenue. Credit card charges. I think the credit card charges, so there's a couple things because we have the parking, which is handled a little bit differently than in the moorage. But what we've tried to do was, I really hate giving money to credit card companies. So what we did do was we tried to work, and I think we're up a pretty high percentage of all the permanent moorage, but we were working on doing ACHs, automated clearinghouse, bank-to-bank transactions for payment. And that way we alleviate credit card charges that ultimately, if we're paying it, we end up having to pass it through to somebody at some point. So we've reduced that down, and I think we have at least pretty close to 80% of all permanent moorage customers now just pay via ACH instead of credit card. And then I just want to touch base on reserves and some financial policies. So our reserves, they currently stand, and that's not shown on any paperwork here, but I could get it for you. The county changed their, the county completely revamped their system. So I can't navigate it, but I did get this from the controller a couple of days ago. I'll have to figure out how to get back in and navigate it. But our reserves currently stand at $2.18 million, And this includes, which is great because we were about 831,000 at the very beginning of 2019. So we keep building those reserves, and that's kind of the idea. But while we're doing this, we're also spending money and we're reinvesting in terms of repair and maintenance as well as capital projects. But that 2.18, we had to pay in over 122,000 for our insurance. Our insurance has gone up from 67,000 when I started to 122,500 this year. And that just has to do with the global markets for insurance have just gone crazy with all the, you know, they said, well, some of it's just the instability for global markets. Some of it was fires that throughout the United States. Some of it was just there's just been kind of an, you know, its own kind of epidemic of claims. So we are we're in a risk pool with many of the ports as well as some of the fire districts. But our insurance, and we've actually, okay, at this point, I believe that we will be break even in terms of our loss claim ratio this year. So if I were to look back, I did look back over the claims over the past like 10 years. So, but we've been paying in for a long time. So they step up if we need anything. And Duras has done a good job of that. But we'll be just at break even in terms of loss claim ratio for the past 10 years, I think it is, with this payment. But that money's been going out, so we, you know, insurance, you gotta pay in advance, unfortunately. It's called float. That's why people love to invest in insurance companies. So, but they have our money already. You know, this year we still have debt payment, limited tax, general obligation bond for the covered mortgage. I think the balance on that is still about 790,000, I wanna say. And we'll be paying about $85,500 into that for this year. So we do have, I do have financial policies that I've drafted up. And what we need to do, though, is really go over it. Now that we have Audra Traynor as our controller, we're going to go over it, and we're going to submit the actual financial policies for commission review. But I think we need to put those into place. And that will tell us exactly, hey, here's the reserves, here's what they're dedicated to, and this is what we're going to try to do going forward in terms of long-term, just being responsible in terms of what we should carry for cash. One of the issues that we have, that every port, and we brought it up at the all ports meeting, is Kitsap County is our treasurer, so we make maybe about 1 point, you know, on our reserves. We're making a percent, maybe a little bit more sometimes. But the problem is when you have inflationary period, and if you're, if it's 5% inflation and you're making 1, you're losing 4% on your money. Super bad, really. We asked actually the head of a director of finance and accounting for Port of Grace Harbor. I said, what do you do? Because this is unacceptable losses. But we got to keep our cash. So how do you deal with this? And he said, yeah, it's a serious problem because there are lots of real restrictions on being your own treasurer and how you can invest the money. But there were a couple people came up with some different creative concepts that they said this without drastically increasing our risk for those reserves, but getting some better return out of it. But one of the ways that people do it is if you have substantial reserves. Real estate moves with inflation, which is what most people are concerned about going forward is inflation. So if we buying actually the Toth and the Hill property was a really good move because obviously it's been increasing in value. So having like that, but it is still fairly liquid. If we wanted to sell it, we would not take a loss. We'd sell it at a real, at a pretty healthy margin. Not that ports like to buy and sell property. Usually ports are buy and hold. That's it. But we have to look at vehicles for what we can do with our reserves to be more responsible, I think, this coming year going forward. The last thing that we're going to try to do this coming year is we're going to put together a cash flow projection over the life of all assets. And what that does is that you can look out and you can say, okay, well, we have a balloon payment in 15 years. Or maybe if we put that we reinvest now in the marina, we can extend it out to 20 or 25 years, the life of the asset. So we aren't going to have that balloon payment. We can push it out, and then you can adjust your rates more gently, and you can adjust, you don't have to worry about your cash flow issues. And then, of course, we're going to be super aggressive about bad debt, derelict vessels, anything that puts us at risk, we just can't afford to have anybody, you know, have a loss like that. So that's it in a nutshell, and I'm open to questions.
Laura, you're on me.
Thank you. Thank you, Greg. That takes us into our second public comment period. Do we have any public that would like to make another comment?
No, we're good, Laura.
Okay. Are they all still here?
Yep. Yes.
Are all the public still in the audience?
Yep, they're here.
I think so.
They're good. Okay. They said they're good.
Okay, so we'll move on. Their next public meeting is going to be Wednesday, November 17th at 1 o'clock. It will also be a hybrid and also at the Village Green. So come, please. So do I have a motion to adjourn this meeting at 7:52?
I move we adjourn.
I second that motion.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Meeting adjourned at 7:52.